come to a close in our series called Life Apps. It's posted online, though, in case you missed any of this. But I wanted us to take just a half a minute and not talk about these apps, but you Android or iOS or even Windows phone users, got a favorite app? Anybody got a favorite app?
I do now.
Oh.
YouVersion.
Yeah, awesome. The Bible. Do you guys know about YouVersion? I think I've told you about this. This is awesome. What I love about it is, I can have it on my phone or on my iPad, and I can read it at night. Like if I'm thinking, sometimes, yeah, there's times so I can get my tablet and, dim it so it doesn't wake Cindy and read it. And if I'm able to, and then if I want to just kind of listen to it, you can listen to it in several translations. So it's a really cool thing. So, but that wasn't a plug for that, but it is cool. Anybody, it could be secular even. Anybody got a favorite app?
Solitaire,
well, absolutely. All right, absolutely. Yeah, anybody? What is it? Well, gotta have a good navigator, yes. Yes, I love my AccuWeather. I check that every day. I like the, I don't know why I can't do anything about the weather, but I'd like to know. So, what?
Mahjong.
Oh, yeah, you guys are heavy gamers over here in this family. Ooh, solitaire and Mahjong. Yeah. I'm not a big gamer, but I am having fun. Do you ever see on the History Channel that show Pawn Stars?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. They've got a great iPad. Well, you can do it on iPhone. They got a great app. It's free. It's Pawn Stars. And it's a little addicting. But you buy stuff, sell stuff, and it's kind of fun. Yeah. I know. I lost my calling, didn't I? Yeah. The Lord's how mysterious he is. Yeah. So, yeah, that's right. So, I was trying to find one because I'm kind of interested in law. I was kind of trying to find an app where you get these cases handed to you and you're a lawyer on either side. I thought that'd be kind of a fun app game, but maybe a little complicated and time-consuming, so it's a good thing. Somebody just a few weeks ago said, do you play games online? I said, I'm on the computer so much that who has time to play games? I think I would like computer games if I didn't have to use my computer so much. So some of you can relate to that, right? Yeah, I know some of you, it's like, are you kidding? That's like an appendage during the week. So anyway, but we're closing this series, Life Apps. And if you haven't been with us, if maybe you're joining us for the first time in the series, again, all of it's online, Hillside Cares. You can find it there. But we've been basing our series on a passage of scripture in James. And this is really kind of a passage of scripture that should describe our lives, but it's James 1:22 when it says, "Do not merely listen to the word and so deceive yourself, do what it says." That's key. That's absolutely key. So as we review this, I've been reviewing each week just so you can kind of catch up. Again, a reminder. I like doing series like this because they kind of build on each other, even though each of these topics has been different. But the first week, we looked at that principle, that just basic principle of application that says application makes all the difference. And some of you have had in your relationships, it's like, okay, I can hear you talk, but I need to see some action, with our kids too. Yeah. And then the five life apps that we're going to look at the last one today. We have five life apps every Christ follower should have. If you're not a Christ follower yet, you can try these at home. But these are ones that aren't negotiable. These are mandatory. And I know some of you are probably thinking, well, why didn't we have Bible reading and prayer and all? That's all relationship stuff, assuming. These are apps that you apply out in your life and really is the fruit of your time in the Word, in prayer. First one we talked about was, we started with forgiveness. And we found that forgiven people forgive. When we recognize all that God has done in our lives, we are willing to forgive. The second week, we looked at the topic of confession. And confession, we saw that genuine confession then leads to genuine change. It's not just sorry, Last week we then looked at, or the next week we looked at the app of rest, and that's a tough one. That's one, and all of these are ones that I have to work on. But this one especially was convicting, and we found that our lives move to a better place when we live them at a sustainable pace. And I have a couple of people in my life who pattern that very, very well. The fifth one, the one we looked at last week, was the life app of trust. And we saw that our relationships are no stronger than the amount of trust we have in them. And we saw that in trust, love bends, doesn't it? And so as we talk through our final app, I want to take you back many years ago, many years ago, to when I was in high school and college, and I started speaking in churches. I started speaking at things before I knew that God wanted me to be in a ministry, but I would do things for like youth groups and for teen banquets and church banquets, church services sometimes. Remember one of the first things I did, went out at Mariners Church out in Discovery Bay years and years and years ago. And it wasn't at, they didn't have a church there. I think they still were meeting in a school and still do. But I spoke there for different things, and it was always a fun learning experience for me speaking in these situations. I have some really great memories. I have some really funny memories too. When people would come up and talk to me, and sometimes they would announce that the pastor was going to be gone. We don't like to do that because then there's this big exodus, you know. So just kind of a surprise. But it'd be funny when I would walk in and people would say, oh hey, I recognize I was a visitor. I'd say, oh welcome, and hey, we just want to apologize, you know, the pastor isn't here, so we hope you'll come back again when the real preaching, you know, happens, you know. And then, of course, I would have to break the news to him, well, the reason why I'm here is because your pastor isn't here. And so, you know, I'm here because he wasn't. A little awkward. I remember preaching in two different churches a couple of weeks apart, and after the message, an old guy comes up to me and he goes, hey, that was a good message, but let me make a suggestion. I said, okay. He said, you used a whole chapter of the Bible to preach your message. And I said, yeah. He goes, that's way too much to try to tackle in one message. So I didn't necessarily agree with him, but I thought, okay, I'm, you know, young. I thanked him, took the advice to heart. A few weeks later, I had to preach in another church, and so I thought, I was kind of taking this guy's advice. Maybe he's taking a chapter on is just too much. So I, you know, had just a couple of verses that I was preaching on, and as you might guess, a guy comes up to me, another old guy comes up to me and goes, hey, that wasn't bad. But hey, I got to tell you, you should include a lot more scripture because, you know, the Bible's a lot. There's a lot in there, and you'll never get through it just doing a few, four or five verses at a time. So, you know, but it was fun. But you've been there before, you know, kind of had those situations where we've had all those, where you put your foot in your mouth or vice versa. We've had those good conversations, those great conversations. We've had those embarrassing conversations. And then we have those routine conversations that we have, you know, every single day. They're just a part of life. And I bring this up because recently I found an insight in research about conversations that really startled me. This insight comes, and I really used it to launch some of the content here, but it was from a group called the Gottman Institute, and they've done a lot of research. They do a lot of sociological research and so forth, and here's what they said. They said, in our conversations, whether at work, with our spouse, whether it's dating relationships, parent-child relationships, you know, whatever, there's a ratio in our conversations, a ratio of encouragement to criticism. And their observation is that for every single positive compliment, encouraging statement, you have six criticisms, negatives, you know, that happen in your life. So 1 to 6, that's how we live our lives. So to illustrate that, for every, hey, thanks for being a great spouse, thanks for being a great husband, great wife, thanks for doing a great job, thanks for being a great son or daughter, great job on that project, excellent report, hey, thanks for all you do. For every one of those, you get six, hey, why aren't you doing this? Why did you do it that way? You know, what's going on with you? Why can't you be more like your brother? you know, whatever it is. Why did you do that? Why did you do it that way? What's wrong with you? 6 to 1. So kind of the scale there. Got this encouragement. We got one piece of encouragement. We got, you know, six criticisms, six things. And I'm not talking about critique. I'm talking about negative statements in our life. And when I saw that study, when I read that a few weeks ago, I thought, that kind of explains why things are the way they are in the workplace. You know, some of you work in workplaces that are so negative and so dysfunctional, and I think that explains it. When the conversations in the workplace are toxic, the workplace is going to be toxic. right? It also explains why some marriages, you know, struggle. When conversation in marriage is toxic, it's going to be a self-fulfilling prophecy. And so you ever heard somebody say, I just can't seem to do anything right in your eyes? You know, or maybe you've said that. See, this is the real issue. This is the real issue right here. So here's the good news. Today's Life app is going to help us with that. It's the Life app, you already know, of encouragement. Now, here's the problem with encouragement. Nobody's going to argue that encouragement is nice. Encouragement's a good thing to do. None of you are going to say, well, yeah, you should. No, none of you are going to say, that's wrong. You don't have to encourage. It's no big deal. But what we're going to say is, and what we tend to say, it's nice, but it's not critical. I mean, it's not urgent. It's just the nice thing to do. It's the polite thing to do. Just be a nice person. And that in itself is where we kind of run into a problem, see? If it's just a convenient thing, a nice thing for us to do. See, if we think that encouragement is just a nice thing for us to do and it's not urgent, we'll drift toward criticism. Because here's the first thing I wanted to point out is this, is that we never drift toward encouragement. We never default to encouragement. We default to complaining. We default to negative, picking out, you know, negative things. We have to, like all of the other life apps that we've talked about, we have to fight for this. So today we're going to talk about an encouragement principle from the Bible. And this encouragement principle is going to allow us to hopefully change that 6-to-1 ratio, that 1-to-6 ratio, however you say it. So let's start with a question. First of all, just think for yourself just to kind of get us started. As you look back on just say the last 7 days, the last week of your conversations at home, at work, with your friends, even maybe in your neighborhood, whatever. What was your ratio? What would you say your ratio was? too many times we just talk, and I know I'm very guilty of that because, you know, it's like I talk for a living. But we're going to learn this application from the Bible, it's so incredibly helpful. And let me show you how it's going to help you in your conversation. So I just wanted to give you some groundwork. We have basically 3 levels of conversation. You could probably put them into more categories, but I just wanted to break them up into 3 to make them, you know, kind of easy. We first have that inner circle. And that inner circle, that's like your husband, your wife, the person you're dating, your kids, those people who are most familiar with you. Those people who really, really know you well. Those are people that are the people that you'd put on a list of, here's who I do life with, you know. Not just see a lot, but actually do life with and the most. And sadly, the people we do life with the most, our family, our friends, those are oftentimes the people we take most for granted. And our conversations tend to look like that 6-to-1 ratio. That's very common. So there's that inner circle of conversations, and then there's that wider circle. We could call that next level is our circle of influence. So this is coworkers. This is your, you know, if you're on a tennis team or you coach or something like that. This is, you know, people in, if you're in college, your dorm room or whatever, your neighborhood. It's that wider circle of influence. Then there's another circle, and I just threw it out here, called it, you know, life. it's our life circle. It's people you have conversations with. It's people at the grocery store. It's the gal at the coffee shop. It's the guy at the dry cleaners, whatever. And we often have a tendency to take these for granted as well, because we just figure, hey, it's quick. We're not trying to have a relationship, whatever, just in and out. So what if we decided, as Christ followers, that in the course of life, in these 3 circles of conversation, what if we decided that instead of just being conversations, these are actually interactions of opportunity? That these are actually ways we can build bridges. You know, sometimes we pray, Lord, please bless Susie. Please bless Bob or whatever. Please bless this person. And I think sometimes the Lord's saying, I did bless Susie. I did bless Bob with something, and it's got a name, and it's your name. You know, I did bless them with you. And see, if we're not careful, we'll drift toward that 6-to-1. And as a person, now you come in each Sunday, and you see me, and probably you would probably say, yeah, he's encouraging, because every time you see me talking typically, I'm trying to be encouraging. But I don't drift toward constantly encouraging. I have to watch this. I have to constantly be looking at this. This is very convicting for me. And you think, you? Many of you only see me once a week, and I'm always encouraging. So I'm at a pretty good ratio with you. But I'll tell you, I have to constantly look at this, constantly fight this. Even when I had a staff, you know, that was larger, constantly be an encouragement, be an encouragement. So many people do things around here, volunteer. This is something. So I don't want you to just say, I'm standing up here as being pious that, okay, oh, I've got this all together. Now you should do like I do. I'm in this with you. If we're not careful, we will drift to this 6-to-1 ratio. But changing that not only benefits people in your circles, it benefits you. I'm not talking about this in a selfish way. The principle we look from the Bible is a win-win, and God makes it very clear the way he says that. Now, not only do people in these circles win, but there's something that you're going to really have a satisfaction in, and so we'll look at the principle from the Bible. Then we're going to come back. We're going to kind of revisit these circles a little bit and give some examples of how this kind of plays out in each of these, and then I'm going to give you a homework assignment. And which basically is going to encourage you to improve this ratio, and I'll just show you how. We're going to look at Proverbs 11, and if you're not familiar with the book of Proverbs is written by a really amazing guy, fascinating, interesting guy by the name of Solomon. Solomon is known as the wealthiest man who ever lived. He's known as the wisest man, of course, not outside of Jesus, but the wisest man who ever lived. He wrote the book of Ecclesiastes. He wrote most of the book of Proverbs, and he wrote 2 of the Psalms that we have. And in Proverbs 11, he gives us this outstanding principle as it relates to encouragement. But I want to manage your expectations a little bit. I gave that example of the guy who was upset because I preached too much, and the guy who, you know, was upset because I preached too little. I'm going to do something I have never, ever done before, and my whole text is a half a verse. That's what we're going to launch off of, okay? Now, it's a whole proverb, because Proverbs is basically a list of principles that are given, that Solomon gave in his wisdom, in his God-directed wisdom, he gave as little statements that would guide us to have a life pleasing to God and a life that's fulfilling. So if you're one of those people thinking, good, I could hardly wait to get to church today, I'm sure the pastor's going to cover a whole chapter of the Bible. I'm going to be on your bad list, But here's what we do. What we're going to do is we're going to dig down into this one section, and we're going to really just take it and say, how can we apply this? How can we live this? And I think it's going to help in your circles of conversation. It's going to improve our ratios, right? And there's something really at stake here for us. So here's this encouraging principle that we'll spend the rest of our time considering. It's one proverb. It's a half a verse. Proverbs 11:25. He who refreshes others will himself be refreshed. Let's read it out loud, okay? Half a verse. You got a half a verse memorized, right? That was easy. Okay? Proverbs 11:25. He who refreshes others will himself be refreshed. You know, literally in Hebrew, what this says, it says, he who waters will himself be watered. And I thought, that's kind of an interesting way to translate. But what is Solomon saying by that? First of all, you know, everything needs water. Everything. Even stuff in the desert needs at least a little bit of water. Every living thing needs water. And I think you could also translate this, that he who replenishes others will himself be replenished. And Solomon knows, like everybody needs water, every single person needs encouragement. Every single person. In all 3 of our circles of conversation, all of those people, you know, all of them suffer and are suffocated sometimes, feel suffocated from self-doubt and insecurity. We all struggle with that, I think. Feelings of self-doubt, feelings of insecurity. And we can be as seemingly, you know, together and confident as anything, but I think we all suffer for that. I love what Truett Cathy was the founder of Chick-fil-A, and he said something really encouraging, and I loved this. He's like 90, he's even in his 90s now, still going strong, but he said a great statement. He said, it's kind of like an international symbol, that he said. He says, if you want to identify someone who needs encouragement, he said, that person's breathing. That's the international sign for somebody who needs encouragement. You want to know if somebody in your life needs encouragement? Just check and see if they're breathing. That's what he said. And I love that. You know, if they're breathing, they need encouragement. Now, if you're at the office, no heartbeat, not breathing, just leave them. They'll be fine. No, you may want to call somebody or take them to the break room in the fridge or something. I don't know what you're going to do, but we all need it, right? That was his point, of course. So, and all of us, to a certain extent, we're plagued by, again, by that self-doubt, by insecurity in some form or fashion, and I can prove it to you. Ladies, let me tell you what men in the room, and if they're watching online or whatever, what men wrestle with most. We wrestle with a lot of things. But most men, I'll say, wrestle and carry around a question. They may not really know it, and they might say, I wouldn't say it that way, but it's true. And they may deny it, but, you know, that they're lying. The question that we as men, we struggle with is, do I have what it takes? You know, and it comes in different, do I have what it takes to take this job? Do I have what it takes to be a leader? Do I have what it takes to be the husband I should be? Do I have what it takes to be the father I should be? Do I have what it takes? And we've had different times of our life. You know, we talk about, you know, having cold feet. Why? It's never because, well, I don't know if I love this person. Typically, it's like, wow, I'm going to be a husband, and I'm going to be a father. Do I have what it takes? And what happens is, it's not just that we have that question, but we go into the world that says, no, you really don't. You want an answer? Nope. Do I have what it takes? No, you don't. You're a loser. And so we get beat down. And, you know, what we call it is that I'm in a competitive market. Right? But what we really feel is like, I don't have it. I don't have what it takes. And please don't miss this. You know, if men go home and the conversation is full of criticism and we're already wrestling with this question of, you know, do I really have what it takes? That's a tough place to live if the atmosphere there is really, really critical. Now, guys, let's flip it the other way. Because here's the question all ladies in the room wrestle with. And this is true. This is true of dating. This is true of friendships. This is true in all kinds of, even from employers. But I'll use the marriage analogy for this, just because, you know, to phrase this, because I am a husband. So husbands, you know what your wives are, and I have a very confident, strong wife, you guys know. But do you know the question our wives ask? They're asking, does he notice me? Does he notice who I am? Does he notice what I'm doing? And ladies, please bear with me, because you're bear with us as guys, because we're kind of clueless. All right, we are. You know, it's like, well, of course you're special. I married you 28 years ago, didn't I? You know, so it's like, I don't know. Why did I just become a redneck all of a sudden? I don't know. What was that? Dumbing it down here a little bit for you, right? Well, of course, you know, I chose you, didn't I? What are you talking about? Here's the thing, and of course, I live in a household of women, but sometimes we kind of are clueless, and ladies, I didn't see any of you write that down. Oh, men are clueless. Didn't know that. Oh, yeah. That's why I didn't make it a blank on your insert, because I figured you don't need to fill that one in. You got that already covered. But, you know, I can prove that ladies are asking this, and again, I raising three girls and so forth, but... you see, I'll give you an example. Ladies, when you go get a haircut, guys, when the ladies go get a haircut, you know, they go get their hair done, they don't run and say, hey, did you see I got my hair cut? Did you see I got my hair done? They don't run and do that. They wait. It's a cruel game, ladies, by the way. Very cruel. And I don't know what the time frame is. I don't know if it's 5 minutes or 10 minutes or 15. But once that buzzer sounds, guys, I mean, the lights on the dashboard better be going off, because we missed it, you know. And hey, didn't you see that I got my hair cut? Sometimes Cindy will call me and you'll say, hey, Brittany got her hair cut. Janelle got her hair cut. Stephanie got her hair cut. She's really happy about it, so be positive. Okay, so I always love that warning. See, that's a good wife right there. Hey, you know, it's like, you know, mine is, you know, well, it would be, oh, yeah, it's cute. Why so short? Right? Okay, so, no, I, I admitted already we're clueless, didn't I? Okay, good. No, and so it's just like, because I love long hair too. Well, my girls, you know, all have long hair, but the fact is if they wanted short hair, they, you know, but here's it, they don't ever come and go, so what do you think, Dad? They just walk in. They just kind of, and they wait. It's like, wow, you got your hair cut. Now, I'm really not trying to be catty, and I'm not trying to be even frivolous with this, because the truth of it is that bottom line, it's not about hair. It's like, does he really notice me? Does he really notice? It's kind of like those of us who've had mustaches and beards, you notice when other people shave their mustache and beard off. People who don't, they don't notice as much. Like, oh, did you lose weight? What happened? New outfit? Used to have a mustache. I remember when I shave it off, people go, yeah, you've lost some weight. So I do that every now and then just to get the cycle going. But it was nice to hear for a couple weeks. Wow, you've lost weight. Well, not a lot, but yeah. But as a dad of daughters, I've seen this. I mean, and my wife too. They want to know, do you think I'm special? Do you value me? Do you think I'm pretty? Do you think, I mean, is he noticing me? And again, as a dad of daughters, I got to tell you, society makes me mad. What society does to young women, I'll tell you, it tells them they're not pretty enough. It tells them they're not skinny enough. It tells them their skin's not clear enough. It tells them all kinds of stuff that they struggle with. And, you know, they don't measure up to some computer-enhanced image of a supermodel on a magazine at the checkout counter, you know, at the grocery store. So they're just not enough. And they hear that day in and day out. And those of us who are dads of daughters, and I'm looking at some here, those of us who are dads of daughters, boy, if we get so busy at work, at life, whatever it is, and we don't notice our daughters enough to say, you are beautiful, you're wonderful, you are special, I'm noticing you. I'll tell you, we leave our daughters vulnerable. And if we're not careful, we treat the people in our circles the same way, and it's a shame. But I think life gets so busy that sometimes we don't see it. And now here's what's ironic. Do you know where we really do get this right? There is a part of our life that we really do always get this right. Funerals. We always get this right at funerals. We never have a 6-to-1 ratio at funerals. It's, you know, if you've been to a funeral, man, he was the greatest guy, and well, whoever lived, he was kind, he was talented, and he was wonderful. And that's good, and that's appropriate. There's just one problem. they can't hear it, right? I heard a quote, I don't know who said it, and you've probably heard something like this, similar to, but, you know, don't wait to give people roses of encouragement at their funeral. Give them to them while it's still called today. And I think what a great thing for us as people who are following Jesus to be a source of encouragement. We've got to fight for this. We aren't going to default for this, because if we're not careful, we'll drift to that 6-to-1 ratio easy, if not worse. Now, let's think about this, some practical examples of how this works back to our circles. That's why it's displayed there. So we look at our influence circle. So we take that principle from Proverbs, and we're trying to live this out. We don't want to just hear it and say, great, oh, that I can even tell you what it is in Hebrew. Now, how do we live this on a daily basis? Influence circle. Let's just start there in the middle. I'm amazed, absolutely amazed at how many businesses fail to practice encouragement at the workplace. It's seen as a nice thing to do, but it's never seen as great business. And it's astounding to me because it doesn't cost anything. That's the really, you know, hey, any free advertising, anything free you can get, do it, right? But it's one of the easiest things, and yet it's something we don't do. I mentioned Chick-fil-A earlier to Kathy, and there's a guy by the name of Jimmy Collins who was a president for many years. He worked for Chick-fil-A for like 32 years, and he retired somewhat recently. But he worked for Chick-fil-A. He retired back in 2000. But anyway, he was the COO of the organization, and apparently he did a lot of creative things to be encouraging to not only the staff there at the headquarters, but to all of the stores and all the salespeople, the sales staff. And I heard an employee tell us this story, true story. This employee walked in to the office, and the president, Jim Collins, is sitting at his desk with a lighter, lighting pieces of paper. Now, generally, if you walk into the office and the president's burning paper, not generally a good sign, right? So the guy asked me, he says, can I ask what you're doing? And he says, oh, yeah. He said, I just burned some of these edges off these sales. These are sales reports. And I burned some of the edges off of these sales reports. And he takes the ashes, and he put them in an envelope, and then he'd write a letter. And he said, this was the letter. He said to whatever salesperson or whatever, he'd go, your sales are on fire. I believe in you. I am praying for you. Hang in there. Sincerely, Jimmy Collins, president Chick-fil-A. I thought, man, they folded up, put it in there. And he said, you know, the corporation, they do these seminars, these conventions, kind of seminar things. And he said, you'd be amazed. You'd go to these seminars, and you'd listen to people talking, and they'd be, you know, winning cars and winning all kinds of, you know, neat things. And he says, people would stand up, and he said, time and time again, you'd hear somebody say, you know, we're halfway through the year, three-fourths of the way through the year. Sales goals that we were trying to reach were ridiculous. There was just no way we were going to be able to do it. And I was ready to give in the towel, throw in the towel, just give it all up. And then I get this letter, and I open it up, and all these ashes fall out. And I open up this letter, and Jimmy Collins says, I believe in you. Your sales are on fire. I believe in you. I'm praying for you. I'm in your court. You know, I'm with you, and keep up the great work. Hang in there. And he said, you would hear time and time again, people would talk about things like that, the encouragement. They said, hey, if he believes in me, I'm going to believe in me, and I'm going to head this and keep on going. And why can't we be like that? I mean, we can be like that. So I think, don't tell me that encouragement's just a nice thing to do, and, you know, we'll get to it sometime. And we'll, you know, when we get to it, we'll get to it. Encouragement's huge. I mean, bottom line, I mean, you know, Chick-fil-A did pass up last year, the Colonel last year in sales. So they're almost $5 billion, just kind of crazy. But that's why, so some of you are bosses, and some of you are maybe business owners, and if you're a boss or a leader or a manager or whatever, let me give you a simple question that you can take with you to apply this principle in Proverbs. Start asking employees, and anybody who's under you, you know, and it won't cost you anything. But I would really strongly suggest that you ask your employees, how are you doing? Twice as much as you ask, what are you doing? Right? Ask them, how are you doing? Hey, we're going to get to the business stuff. We're going to talk about business and all that. We got to, you know, crunch some numbers, and we got to work on this project and everything. But how are you doing? How are you liking working here, you know? How are things going? How are things with your family, you know? I'm not saying you have to be a therapist or a professional counselor. I'm just saying, just encouraging. How are you doing? I think it's important to remind ourselves that the person, you know, that person's not just an employee, that they are like a real person. And this person like you, especially if they're a new employee, they're plagued with, you know, with self-doubt and insecurity, even if they come in like the cocky kid from, you know, wherever. They need that encouragement. And it's going to remind us to be kind of leader, kind of manager, kind of director, whatever it is, the kind of employee, the employer that really says, you know, creates that great work environment. Because if you don't, what's going to happen? It'll go 6-1, you know, and or worse. And I'm telling you, the bottom line suffers when our conversations at the workplace are like that. How about to our inner circle? That's where we live. That's who we love the most. Hey, ladies, I picked on the husband. I'm not actually going to pick on you. I picked on the husbands a little bit earlier, but can I challenge you? You probably, ladies, most of you, probably underrate yourself as to how powerful your voice is to your husband. We long to hear appreciation and your respect and encouragement. Now, because we're a bit slow, you have to be really clear sometimes. Example, okay? So, you know, example, a couple weeks ago, I'm talking about rest, Remember that? We talked about the REST app. And we said REST is often associated with trust and all that. But if you're not willing to rest, you're not really trusting God. And then I made a statement like this. I said something like, you know, one of the most spiritual things that you could do this afternoon is to go home and take a nap, you know? And I think Diane leaned over to Roger and said, "Boy, you really are spiritual." See, we wouldn't know how to. Which side is that? Is that the criticism? I don't know. Yeah, no. I'm kidding. He didn't say that. I just made that up. But you see, sometimes we have to kind of, you know. And by the way, it can be a very spiritual thing to take a nap. So remember that. See, I'm not sure. Sometimes, you know, I know that sometimes we sometimes will accuse our wives of nagging, and they really want to be encouraging. And we men can do the same things. We can nag at our wives. The women always get a bad rap with that. But, you know, we have to really be clear in our encouraging so that they know, so they don't walk away going, "Was that an encouragement or was that a kick in the behind?" Not quite sure how to. We need to make sure an encouragement is encouragement. A little sidelight, too. We do this, you know, say this with children, too. I remember Cindy and I being taught this, and I thought this was such a good guideline. Let your criticisms and your critiques be there, your discipline, and then have some compliments. Don't combine the two in the same sentence. "You're a really sweet girl, and you're really nice most of the time, but," right? Because then they'll always associate those compliments with something negative. So you got to make those clear. Some of you grew up that way, right? If you ever got a compliment, it always had a caboose on the end, right? "But you need a..." We have to be clear about that. And kids, I mean, parents, as your kids get older, and I've been able to do this with my kids now. My kids are older now, and when they were little, we couldn't. But if you can talk to them and say, "Hey, how's my ratio?" Now, if they're not here today, you may have to kind of explain what, you know, this little study. But what's my ratio criticism to encouragement? Do I encourage you more than I criticize you? That's probably even an easier way to say it. And then just listen. And students, I guess, you know, we got young people here. Flip-flop that. I know raising parents is hard these days, but what's your ratio criticism to encouragement to your parents? And I know... It's difficult sometimes when you're younger to see your parents as real people, right? But let me ask you, what's your ratio of criticism to encouragement? And you might say, you know, maybe even if we're older, "Yeah, but hey, David, my parents are so dysfunctional. I just can't do that." And maybe the reason why they're so dysfunctional is because they've been living with a 6-to-1 ratio or less. You know, just throwing it out there. Don't wait on this. Let's look at the final circle, that life circle. And these are the conversations that we really many times take for granted. We don't think they're important. When my girls, my two older ones, when they started dating, you know, and Steph hasn't really, she's just got a lot of friends and so forth. But as the girls have been dating, I always said, watch how they treat people in general. Watch how these guys treat people in general. Not just, you know, we always say, watch how they treat their mother. Vitally important. How do they treat, if they take you to dinner, how do they treat the waiter or the waitress? How do they treat the person who sat you down? How do they treat the person that took you the ticket stub, you know, when you went in the movie? How do they treat them, the person at the popcorn place? How do they treat them? Because that's a good indicator of how they're going to treat all the other people in their life, including you. So that every time we bump into somebody, realize it's not a conversation, it's an opportunity. We have these tiny little opportunities of encouragement. And you might think, come on, it's not that big a deal. It's not that, you know, big a deal to encourage. I mean, the waiter or the barista or whatever. Let me tell you something about encouragement. Encouragement is never small to the person who's on the receiving end of it. Have you ever been encouraged by somebody and they go, that's no big deal? When you are being encouraged, that's huge. Encouragement is never small when you're on the receiving end of it and you have, you know, opportunities here. While I'm talking about this, let me just pull you aside to say a couple of comments about two groups. I think of people in our church, for example, single people. I think of single parents hugely. And with life situations happening, I mean, we got it, you know, have in my life another addition of somebody who's not only single, but is a parent, but is also a widow. And that's somebody else to consider. Who are the people in our lives that need that kind of encouragement? Now, we all need it. But there are people that are usually quiet because they're struggling just to get by. They feel lonely, you know, single parents. Just like, what, you know, just trying to just get it done. Don't have enough time to even be emotional about it. They just have to get it done. And I think we need to really take those people who are often forgotten by our world and really be there for them. Could be a note, could be, you know, you show up and do their yard. I mean, it could be all kinds of things, but it could be whatever. But they need to know that we haven't forgotten that their lives, you know, their lives, some of them have changed forever, but they're not alone. Yeah, we're there for them. And my point is, when we begin to really wake up to these circles that we looked at, these circles of conversations that we have, I believe God's going to bless us in amazing ways, you know. We'll move that ratio. So some of you might say, well, David, that's all good and great, and that's wonderful, but what about me? I need some encouragement. I'm the one who needs some encouragement. You don't have to raise your hand. I know you, there are people sitting right here who would say, I absolutely need encouragement. Some of you come here on Sundays because this is where you get it. And that's a great question. You say, I need somebody to speak into my life. I need somebody to encourage me. What about me? And that's a great question. Can I tell you, for some of us, why we haven't received encouragement that we need. What about me? And I'm not, again, trying to be pious here. Lifeway, the Christian organization, publisher and so forth, did a study of pastors. And the pastors responded back. 55% of pastors said they are discouraged and that ministry makes them feel lonely. So as we drive around this area, you can say, okay, that one's okay. That one's lonely. That one's okay. That one's 55, over half, 55%. But here's why many times you aren't being encouraged. Okay? Many people don't feel good enough about themselves to let you feel good enough about yourself. Many people don't feel good enough about themselves to let you feel good enough about yourself. That's just a sad truth. For some, that explains, you know, the home you grew up in. Explains maybe, you know, maybe your parents weren't encouraging. Maybe for some, it explains the workplace you were in or are in or whatever, or the marriage you were in or are in. It's like, well, yeah, they don't feel good about themselves, so we're not going to get encouragement. It's just that we're at a stalemate here. Okay, because they're not being encouraged because I can't encourage them because I just am out. I'm tapped. And they are not going to get back and forth, and we're just like at this holding pattern. I've heard people describe this in marriage as an emotional divorce. You just kind of bunker down and go for the long haul. So what do I do? We're stuck. That's why this is such a brilliant insight from Solomon, because here's what he's saying in this principle, Proverbs 11:25. This one principle he says, and I've said it earlier. But when you replenish others, the Bible says, you will be replenished. In other words, Solomon's saying, you just can't wait. You can't stop. You can't hold out on this. You just have to go for it first. You have to change the ratio. You replenish. Are you unreplenished? Replenish. And you will be replenished. And there's something at stake here. Remember, this is a principle. You say, well, hey, I've done that in the past and I haven't gotten it back. Solomon's giving a principle here. Could people rebel against this? Absolutely, of course. And so remember it this way. It's a principle, not a promise. You say, hey, I went and replenished one time, and they didn't replenish the one time back. It's a principle of life that's where, could there be an exception here or there? Sure. But Solomon is saying this very clearly. You want to see what the pattern of life is? You want to see how God's made us up? You want to see how God uses you? Typically, here's how it is. You water, you get watered. You replenish, you will be replenished. You encourage, you will be encouraged. And sometimes the encouragement isn't necessarily that they turn around and go, oh, and you're awesome too. Many times it's the Lord encouraging you. It's an underground well that seems to just come and say, wow, just by being an encouraging person. Proverbs 11:25, he who refreshes others will himself be refreshed. I always love those, especially in the summer, you know, those ads for soda. We don't drink soda at our house anymore because of the sugar thing, but you know, refreshing. You know what I mean? You know that feeling, though? You ever been just so thirsty, just, you ever been so exhausted, you lay down in bed, and it's just like your body starts to tingle because you're just like, and you almost want to start laughing because, oh, man, finally made it. After 4.5 days, I'm finally in bed. You know, whatever. You want to be refreshed emotionally and spiritually? So here's a little homework. You don't have to raise your hand, but have you ever counted calories? You ever done that? This is really not a fun thing to do. Don't do that to yourself. It's not fun. I mean, unless you really need to. But I've done that before where I've counted calories. Okay, that bowl of cereal is this much. And okay, I ate this banana. I ate this. Okay, so whatever. Counted calories. All right. This is going to be less painful than that, but just a little more painful than a root canal. Here's what I want you to do, seriously. As you're going through these life circles and your conversations in your life, have you ever had a health a practitioner or maybe a dietitian or somebody say, hey, track your eating for a week, okay? I want you to track this for a week. Track your ratio. So when you have a work, you're in a work situation maybe or at home or whatever, you say, you know, hey, why don't you ever, okay, that was one, all right? How come you did it that way? Okay, that's two. I'm keeping track here, you know. When you say some hard things, make sure, hey, thanks for being here. Hey, thanks for doing that job. Thanks for doing a job I really wouldn't want to have, or whatever the case might be. You know, and a great thing about this is it forces us to look at great things to say. Don't make up stuff. People know if you're not sincere, you know. People know. It's like, wow, you're only 4 hours late, not 6 hours late. That's good. You know, they know. So you have to really look at good things to say, you know. I'm being serious in our family life. Look, be on the lookout. Because if I keep myself accountable and I come home, I'm critical, 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 whoa, I'm on my way to an easy 6-to-1 ratio here. And I better rethink this. Remember God says about the renewing of our minds? Okay, Romans 12. Renew our minds. A new way of thinking. A spirit-led way of thinking. The best encouragement, even for somebody to somebody who's not a believer, spirit-led encouragement. When God tells you, hey, tell them they're doing a great job. Do not refuse that. Listen to that. You may, out of appreciation and gratitude, express that. That's great. But I'll tell you, when the Lord leads you, you say, I need to say something, and I don't really want to because he's not my favorite person or whatever. Just, you know, obey. So that's my homework challenge. Just simply track. If you've got a carry around, there should be an app for that, huh? Encouragement to criticism. So now let me tell you why this is so personal, and then we're going to close this. I have some amazingly encouraging people in my life. I mean, many of you are so, so encouraging. Because he's not here, I'll pick on him. But Bert is an incredibly encouraging person to me. I don't think a Sunday goes by. He has to work today. So, poor guy. But I do too. So, but the truth of it is, you know, the guy, he'll text me. He'll just a little note, Pastor, that message was great. Thank you so much. And on Sunday afternoon, when every pastor's ready to resign because they're just tired and wiped out, get these little notes and little things, you know, hey, love you. And just, you know, Tim will call me and leave a message for no reason. Just, hey, just want to let you know I'm thinking about you, praying for you, you know. And it's a challenge to me because that message I dedicate to those people who are really encouraging because I sadly have to fight for this. Sadly, I don't do this naturally for some reason. It's like, come on, let's get to the next thing. We got to go. So, having said all this, I want to step back and close our series today because we've been saying and, you know, challenging us with five life applications. And if you're here and you're not a Christian, we would say, first of all, I'm absolutely thrilled you're here. Please come back. You're always, always, always welcome. And these life applications, you can try them. But for those of us who say, I am a Christ follower, these are essential. These aren't just apps. They're our operating system, okay? This is what we're guided by. This is what we're commanded to do. Now, Paul said something interesting I want to close with, because Paul said, if you'll live this out, if you'll not just listen to God's word and then just say, wow, that's neat to know, or, hey, here's a principle, good, I can pass that along to somebody else, but we're really willing to live this out, live out God's word, what he's doing. 2 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 3, here's what Paul said was the result of us really living a life of following Christ. He says, you show that you are a letter from Christ, the result of our ministry, written not with ink, but with the Spirit of the living God, not on tablets of stone, but on tablets of human hearts. You are the only Bible some people are going to read. You're the only story of Jesus people are ever going to watch. Some people, they're going to get everything they know about Christianity and following Christ from you, from watching us. That's just the way it is. He said, when we apply, not just learn, we show that we're a letter from Christ. He's mailed you. You're on your way. You're there. And when you do this, you show you're a letter from Christ to the people at work, at school, in your neighborhood, at your home. So having said this, I'm praying that we'll be a church that will choose to forgive, because forgiven people forgive. I want Hillside to be a church where we are quick to confess, because genuine confession leads to genuine change, doesn't it? I hope and pray that we'll choose to also be a church with margin, a church that'll rest, because your life moves and my life moves at a better place when we have that sustainable pace. May we be a church that trusts. And in this day and age, and even in our, you know, here in the Bay Area, it's hard to trust anybody. We almost teach our kids not to trust anybody. But with God's help and strength, we trust because love does indeed bend. And may we choose to be an encouragement. And I have to compliment you. As a church, we always have room to improve, but many of you do this extremely well. Encourage. Because when you replenish others, you will be replenished. Let's bow.